Hello, everyone, and welcome to our part two exclusive interview with Marty Farrell and Oxford scholar Dr. Joseph Farrell. Now, in part one, Marty put on the record for the first time his two meetings with the late journalist Danny Casolaro, who died under mysterious circumstances after investigating what he called the octopus wrapped around the Advanced Promise software. In part two, we'll go even deeper as we connect Casolaro and his key source, programmer Michael Riconosciuto, to the UFO file through Casolaro's research and Riconosciuto's family, including their connection to the Maury Island case. We'll also look at the strange presence of Robert Maxwell on the Promise case and go deeper on the mystery of Barry Kumnick, who adopted the Promise software to a larger program named Brainstorm and may hold the key for who installed the back doors in the program before the Justice Department stole it from Inslaw. Please join us now. Marty, Dr. Farrell, it's great to have you back with us. Now, let's start out with a deep dive here into Promise through the figure of Robert Maxwell.
No.
Because I'm going to give you just a piece of this, and then you could tell me how this could relate to all the things we've seen with Epstein mm-hmm. and Maxwell's mm-hmm. daughter, Ghislaine. Okay. Maxwell in 83 gets into hot water because of these individuals at Sandia, of all places. Mm-hmm. And they get in touch with the NSA and they say, you know, this guy has been tapping into software and using those databases and getting information through infiltrating the software through his company, Pergamon Press. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a series of FBI documents that were locked up around this from 1983. Some of them came out briefly through FOIA requests and then were reclassified.
Yes.
And that story's been kicking around since 2017.
Yep.
Give me, Joseph, why? What kind of connection we could be looking at with an early adopter there, Maxwell, using it? And we know that he's connected not only with the UK intelligence services, but with the Israeli intelligence services, Mossad.
Well, Mossad supposedly was one of the intelligence agencies that purchased the compromised Promise software.
Ah. Okay.
But Maxwell, what I suspect with Maxwell and Epstein is if you read the descriptions of what the Promise software was supposed to be able to do, it was the prosecutor's management information system. So it was designed to track all the cases under adjudication by the Department of Justice through the system. As such, because the government computers at that time were on all of these different computing languages, mm-hmm. they had to have a software that was able to read every language the government computers were using, and then from that be able to compile databases.
Right.
So this software system is a big database compiler that can track through any computer network using any computer language. That's huge. That means you're dealing with software that is, in my opinion, probably several hundred thousands of lines of code long. So it's comparatively easy to sneak a back door into that kind of software and disguise it well. Probably mm-hmm. your back door consists of several lines of code that are dispersed throughout the whole program. Okay.
Right.
So in other words, it's a compartmentalized back door. Mm-hmm. Now, what that kind of software would also enable you to do would be to track inventory. And this is why, if you go back and look at the Inslaw case, they submit that it was also being used by intelligence agencies and banks and so on to track financial transactions, mm-hmm. to track drug trade, or in the Maxwell's case, human traffic.
Right.
You know, it's literally an inventory tracker.
So there, that's fascinating, because the merchandise in that case is actual individuals.
Yeah. Human beings or drugs or the money that you're paying off you know, your purchase of human beings or drugs or whatever. In other words, this is extraordinarily powerful software, mm-hmm. and it can be adapted to do a multitude of things. This is why I think we're possibly looking at software that's been adapted to algorithmic trading, you know, commodities and stocks and bonds, and so on and so forth. And somebody's got a back door to it.
Right.
That no one knows who it is.
Yes, this. Well, it explains. You know, Maxwell's involvement really rings a big bell. The Hamilton reaching out to you. It, if we're putting these puzzle pieces together, if you connect those dots to Maxwell and the fact that the case that they're talking about with him is 40 years ago,
well,
how long has this group been manipulating?
I'll tell you how long. Guess who's connected to the whole Promise case and who actually swore out an affidavit?
Who?
Adnan Khashoggi.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. The richest man in the world or the most powerful arms dealer.
And recently assassinated.
Right.
You know? Yeah, he was right there at the beginning of BCCI, you yep. know, and supposedly taken out by Prince Mohammed bin Salman. That's his nephew. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know. And this guy is connected to this whole Promise software story, too.
Well, you know, the Saudis, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, because they were supposedly one of the countries that bought the software.
Mm. Wow, incredible. So somebody for four decades has been manipulating governments, sovereign governments, from outside with this thing.
Could be.
It's an extra player, would you say that?
Well, either, look... Suppose, here's the problem, Daniel. Suppose you're the Department of Justice. You just let the contract out to take bids on building this software program for, you know, tracking cases through the system. And you post this contract, you know, wherever the government posts contracts like this. And you're a foreign intelligence agency. In other words, do you think the KGB and the GRU and MI6 and the Surete and the Bundesnachrichtendienst and the Mossad and on we could go, do you think that they watch government contracts? Of course they do.
Sure.
Of course they do. Do you think that they would try to position someone inside of whatever corporation would gain the contract to do some of this stuff in order to influence the outcome? Of course they would.
Right.
So now the question is Barry Kumnick or whoever it was at Inslaw putting in this back door, is he acting as someone's agent? If not, is he acting for himself or a group of people that are not state actors? Mm-hmm. That's the other problem. So in other words, they've got a huge security nightmare on their hands with this story.
Absolutely.
Now, we can assume, in my opinion, that it was not the Soviet Union. They may have tried. But the reason I don't think it's the Soviet Union is the Farewell case. You remember that case?
Oh, right.
Of the French running a mole inside the KGB's technical procurements department. And this mole is basically turning over the entire shopping list to the French intelligence, and the French are sharing it with Reagan.
Right.
And Reagan is saying, oh, wow, you guys got a mole inside the KGB. Cool. You know, let's make sure that the Soviets get their hands on some rotten software.
Right, because they need software more than anything.
So the next thing the Soviets do is they have a gigantic explosion shut down one of their natural gas pipelines that was arranged courtesy of this defective software.
Oh, right.
You know? So, you know, what happens when the Soviet Union decides to have a coup d'etat and overturn Mikhail Gorbachev? The coup d'etat doesn't work. Mm-hmm. What coup d'etat allows the telephones and television sets and everything else inside of Moscow to keep working? Yeah, that's a pretty lousy coup d'etat, if you ask me. You know, so I suspect, no, you rule out the Soviet Union as whoever's planting this back door.
Yeah.
So that leaves, you know, that leaves the Mossad, the Saudis, the Germans, the French, you know, the post-war Nazis, you know.
Right. Yeah. It leaves an extra player. There's no
question. It leaves an extra player and nobody knows who it is.
The fact that the reason that I think when you really look at it, it's so plausible is because Hamilton, before he develops the software, is already has the NSA background.
Right.
So when they're looking at him and thinking he's developing this thing, somebody wants to get in there first.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Of course. He must have come to that conclusion. In my opinion, it's possible he did, and which is why he reached out.
The other thing you're going to do is if you're Bill Hamilton and you've worked in this whole national security arena, are you going to be a little concerned about the security of your software development project? Well, of course you are.
Right.
So Hamilton's going to have all sorts of stuff in place at INSLAW to make sure that he can vet the people working on this stuff. And number two, make sure that this program is not going to be compromised before it even gets out of INSLAW's possession. And this is where the problem starts.
Yes.
You know, he's Hamilton's not a stupid man.
You're right.
By any stretch of the imagination.
No. He's worked in that national security environment for decades.
For decades. Bingo. Yes.
So he understands it quite well. And the NSA, the most secretive of them all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two weird elephants in the room on this as we round out the picture of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. One involves Reconosciuto and his dad. Mm-hmm. And the other one involves your book, which is incredible. If you want information about this case, your book, Hidden Finance, Rogue Networks, and Secret Sorcery, mm-hmm. which is all about the 9/11 and the various inconsistencies, along with all of the algorithmic trades and all the bizarre things that happened in relation to that incredible incident.
Well,
the 9/11 piece, let's start with that.
Well, the 9/11 connection here is this. If you've got this database software that Casolaro has been working on and he's got all of his files in his accordion file, and you discover there's been a backdoor. You know, this was Casolaro's discovery that there were modifications to the software that were made after its theft by the Department of Justice that were intentionally put in the software by the government. Okay, I'm going a step further. Well, then why does the modification have to be added after the theft? What if the modification occurs way before that, and it's a modification that nobody knows about, including Hamilton himself? Mm-hmm. Okay. If that's the case, then you've got software, a la the Chinese spy guy, mm-hmm. that can be used to tap into government databases that otherwise you could not tap into. And here's why that's important. Remember 9/11 and the telephone calls to the White House that are disclosing all of those top secret code names?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
How did whoever get them? We still don't know whoever that was doing all of this. Wow. But George Bush sure has to scramble his bony little you-know-what to Barksdale Air Base and then from Barksdale to Offutt, which are the two Air Force bases that are the backup command and command center for America's strategic nuclear forces. He has got to reestablish personal control
over the nuclear arsenal.
Over the nuclear arsenal.
Fascinating.
Because someone else has just taken away the key code. What are we talking about now with Biden, Enco, and Trump?
Right. This is the Trump raid, and they're trying to put the implication in there. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is related to the nuclear aspect.
We're dealing with the same thing.
Interesting.
This has the American deep state panicked.
Yeah.
Someone else is in there.
Absolutely. Joseph, that is so fascinating. Reconosciuto. I want to say a couple of things about Reconosciuto. You brought him up in perspective with the Oklahoma City bombing and mm-hmm. what he described there. Mm-hmm. And we know that because he decided to assist Hamilton, he got raided with this bogus meth lab charge and all the rest. And a lot of people who looked at that case originally, including the original judge, said they didn't think it held up well. And then that guy didn't get reappointed. So we know something funny was going on there. They keep him in jail and then they let him out in 2017. He's out for 6 months and then whew, you're back in prison again. Mm-hmm. But Reconosciuto had an unusual background in that he was, you know, in a sense, a genius, very young, identified that way. But his dad ran the Reconosciuto advertising agency, and his partner in that was someone named Fred Crisman.
Oh. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And, you know, in some of those early affidavits that Reconosciuto is giving about his background, he says, well, you know, Crisman, you know, I had done various things with Crisman growing up, you know.
Like, well, I bet he did.
Crisman is so, you know, he's at the foundation of the UFO file. He's involved in government assassination speculation, even through the Garrison trial, who actually puts him on the stand.
Garrison actually puts him on. He's involved in the Moray Island UFO thing.
Exactly.
You know, and he's involved with those B-27 Marauders or whatever they were.
Yes. Right. And
so he's involved with Reconosciuto's father. Well, gee whiz.
And there's a whole chapter in Kenneth Arnold's book about Crisman. So we know that Crisman is operating on that deep state level all the way back to the 40s.
His
partner is Reconosciuto's dad, and he is part of the, you know, environment that Reconosciuto grows up in, is doing, you know, unusual things for this guy, like bugging people that he's investigating. So what is the elephant in the room there? Because you've got the assassination piece and the UFO file around.
Well, if there's an, I'll tell you the elephant in the room that occurs to me with, you know, you're laying something out there I've never heard before. So, you know, Fred Crisman and Reconosciuto's daddy. Okay. Yeah. What do you make of that, Joe? Well, I'll tell you what I make of it. Reconosciuto, if you look at his early days, you can go find these newspaper articles of him doing some bizarre science project, like, you know, how to make a laser that will shoot plasma to bore a hole through your bank vault door, you know, all sorts of bizarre stuff for a kid doing a science fair project. I tend to believe that Reconosciuto, when he says that he helped work on advanced projects, particularly triggering projects for nuclear weapons, is telling the truth. And I tend to think that when Reconosciuto says that there were molecular chain bombs at work on the Oklahoma City bombing, a molecular chain bomb is basically you set up, you know, it's a fuel-aired bomb. So it's got the two-stage device where you disperse the propellant in the atmosphere, and then you detonate that propellant using the oxygen in the atmosphere as the oxidizer. That's what makes fuel-air bombs so very potent, because you're dealing with a lot of tiny explosions that are setting up, you know, a massive shockwave. Well, the modification to this idea is in popping loose and dispersing the fuel, you set up a chain molecule with that dispersal via electrical means, and then that chain molecule you can literally kind of take and wrap around something, and then you detonate it electrically.
Interesting.
You pass a current through it.
Yes.
So it's like a detonation cord, you know, when you're just passing a current through it and it blows up. Well, Rikanoshudo maintained on one of the post Oklahoma City bombing investigations, and he was maintaining this, incidentally, to Ted Gunderson of all people.
Oh, wow.
You can't make this stuff up, folks. Just, you know, this is like a bad Hollywood B movie that you just can't make up. But I tend to think Rikanoshudo,
FBI agent there.
Well, yeah, I tend to think that Rikanoshudo may be onto something.
Yeah,
because
he knows the advanced technology.
He knows the advanced technology. He knows that it will look like it's doing the same thing as a contact demolition on those columns in the Mura building. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the problem there is, other than one or two witnesses that claim they saw Andreas Strassmeier, you know, helping wire the thing.
Andy the German.
Andy the German, yeah.
other research on that, just off the charts.
Well, yeah, but Mike, you know, to have Michael Rikanoshudo doing all of this, I've got the guy on, you know, I've got that DVD of Rikanoshudo talking to Ted Gunderson.
Fantastic. And
at a certain point, he says, well, you know, we're going to have to talk about some of those matters off the air. And then so why do I think that's interesting vis-a-vis the elephant in the room in Chrisman? Because if you look back at Chrisman, and this is going to sound weird, and his involvement in the Maury Island UFO story, it's Chrisman that's made.
Uh-oh. Marty, I think they zapped him.
I think they did.
There he is. Let's see if we can add him back here.
Yeah, Joseph. I clicked a button and it all disappeared. Anyway, Chrisman is involved in the Maury Island UFO, and he's one of the people that maintains that he saw this molten slag.
Yes.
Coming down from the Maury Island UFO.
Right.
So whatever Chrisman's involved with, if he's telling the truth about mm-hmm. the Maury Island UFO, he's involved in something pyrotechnical. And that's right up Michael Rikanoshudo's alley.
Isn't that interesting? So he could have given him a kind of on-the-job training.
Yeah.
Because after all, Rikanoshudo's growing up with this guy.
You know,
because his dad is partners with him.
Right.
You know, it's on the record that he had him doing these little tasks, you know, these little errands as a teenager for him. Right. So, but it is interesting, isn't it? Because right in the middle of all this, we have the signature of Rikanoshudo. Now he's got the UFO file advanced tech signature mm-hmm. that just somehow got into mm-hmm. all this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's undeniable.
There's a UFO link.
Yes.
And it's in a blog that I've got coming out this week.
Oh, good.
Physicists have recently been able to break the speed of light barrier.
Okay.
And the way they did this was through something called group velocity, and here it comes, in a plasma. Which I just love.
Fascinating.
That, because number one, that should ring a bell.
Yes. Didn't Reich say that his UFOs were plasma ships?
Yeah. And this is exactly, if you're playing around with fuel air bombs and all that good stuff, like we're kind of shooting, at some point you're dealing basically with plasmas of a certain type. You know, cool plasma, certainly, but they're doing all of this stuff, and I'm thinking, okay, well, could this have been something that that they've been playing around with for a long time? Answer, yeah. And they're just now letting us know.
Yeah, right.
Like they always do.
It could be while we're getting such a UFO push in Congress and the government and everything else, is those types of findings.
Yeah. And, oh, I trust this government, which has never lied. Right. Ever about anything in its entire history to tell me, yeah, those UFOs are unfriendly. We better go out there and shoot a bunch of them down.
You know? You're a threat. It's a threat.
They're a threat.
Well, you know, I do want to ask this, since we're on the UFO thing, and I'm going to round this out and connect it this way. Everywhere we turn lately in relation to Space Force, in relation to this new Arrow UFO office, which is Project Blue Book 2022 Redux, it's all the people involved are nuclear personnel. So General Chance over there, who's taken over Space Force, guess where he was stationed for 5 years? Malmstrom Air Force Base. The home of the UFO.
The home of the UFO shutting down the missiles.
Missiles.
Well, what do you know?
Yeah, this one just came out. Here's another one. This came out yesterday where they had Lou Elizondo, who's the guy that TTSA put out there, saying, oh, I quit the Pentagon because I'm doing this whole UFO disclosure thing, and he ran around changing his story left and right. Is he ringing a bell? Well, you did it. You got your own.
I got my own little blue chicken.
This guy, now they found out that he is a security officer for a government nuclear program. That's who he is. That finally came out, and he's been working all along for the government, and he works for Space Force now. So UFO nuclear interlocking link. We're getting it left and right all of a sudden. What is that about?
My best guess, Daniel, is it's about plasma, and it's about fusion. Mm-hmm. Because the one thing that they have not thought to do, at least publicly, they're still trying to bring hot fusion through the big tokamak reactor thing, the big magnets, the containment magnets. Yeah. But they're not doing the one thing, in my opinion, that they need to do to make it work, and that's rotate the plasma itself.
Interesting.
That's the bell.
Yes.
Once they do that, I suspect you're going to see, and the reason that you see the Space Force and the UFO thing and all that involved is they're going to try to stage something under the guise of which they can roll out the technology.
Oh, right.
Oh, if we're gonna be flying and fighting these guys, we have to have a propulsion system to do that. We've got to clamp down on security and roll out the technology. That's what I think they're up to.
Wow.
I know it sounds kooky, but they're going to create a UFO incident to roll out the technology.
And they could create it. The best way to do it is over a nuclear plant, because then they can invoke Bingo. National security.
Bingo.
That is fascinating. When you look at that, so if they're moving into this phase of what's going on with this, the fact that the nuclear personnel are being stationed and being elevated in various things like Arrow and Space Force gives them the ability to say, well, we're experts at both.
Right. Right. And again, I don't trust the government as far as I can throw it, right. Particularly with things like nuclear weapons.
Right.
I think there's another reason they're doing all of this, and I go back to what I have been maintaining all along, and that is when you detonate a nuclear weapon, it acts for a very brief moment as the transducer of energy from the configuration of local space-time. And that's why the yields for the same device, if detonated at a different time and a different place, are going to vary just slightly. And you know, the big example of that being Castle Bravo, you know, predicting it was going to have a yield of between 6 and 7.5 megatons, and it runs away to 15. Well, you know, that's kind of a big oops.
Yeah.
it's not the kind of oops you want to make. But, you know, the business that the Air Force tried to tell us at the time, well, we didn't realize, and to me this is just a knee slapper. We didn't realize that lithium 7 was going to enter the fusion reaction.
Wow.
Bull roar, they didn't realize that because Dr. Ronald Richter down in Argentina told them that.
Interesting.
That's why they interviewed the guy after they blew off their bomb.
Interesting.
He told them all about it. And he also told them, if you recall, that plasma under certain conditions acts as what? A transducer for, quote, what we call the zero point energy, unquote.
Amazing.
Right out of Richter's mouth.
That is fascinating. Well, considering that he's the advanced German weapons project guy, he would know.
He would know.
And you've gone on the record saying that they were using aspects of this nuclear tech before anybody.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Why? Who's Richter working with inside of Nazi Germany? Well, he's working for the Allgemeine Elektrizitätsgesellschaft, who also works for that company. Well, one Dr. Kurt Davis.
Wow.
What is Kurt Davis's specialty? Well, it ain't rocket science.
Right.
It's high voltage and plasmas. And who ends up as the head of the Apollo missions at Cape Canaveral during Apollo? Dr. Kurt Davis.
Davis.
Who ends up, after the whole thing is shut down, who ends up as head of NASA's UFO desk? Dr. Kurt Davis.
Wow. That is a thread.
That's a thread.
That's like the Nazi Bell project, direct thread all the way through Apollo and everything else to the UFO file.
Yep. Oh, and by the way, he also ends up on the board of OTROG, you know, that that secret German compound over in the Congo.
The prequel of SpaceX, right?
The prequel of SpaceX. And thank you, Mikhail Gorbachev, for exposing that, because it was Gorbachev that let that little cat out of the bag.
He did. He did. Gorbachev just passed away.
Yeah.
And
I'm just saying my thank yous.
Gorbachev went on the record at the New York Press Club saying that Reagan took him aside and said, if there's an alien invasion, are you going to help us fight them? And that he said Reagan was absolutely serious. Mm-hmm. And everybody, like, who was in the room, like Kissinger and Charlie Rose, didn't laugh or do anything. They were just freaked out, and they were hoping that he didn't say this. And George Shultz is looking like he's going to collapse on the spot. But Gorbachev sticks with it, and he says, you know, I'm sorry I brought it up, but he was absolutely dead serious when he said to me, will you help us with this alien invasion? Gorbachev's legacy, so many different legacies, helping to end the Cold War and so on, and opening up Russian society, for better or for worse. But that part, putting that on the record, what does that tell us?
To be blunt, what it tells me is that when Colonel Corso wrote his Day After Roswell, and said that the whole doctrine of mutually assured destruction wasn't about the United States or the Soviet Union being able to destroy each other. It was really about being able to destroy any potential invader by overwhelming them with nuclear missiles.
Wow.
It tells me there may be something to that.
So both sides build up their nuclear arsenal so a third force doesn't come in and mess with either
right.
the world, because collectively that's a problem.
Yeah, collectively between them, they've got thousands, tens of thousands of warheads.
Oh, well, that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
And MAD really doesn't make sense, because you wouldn't
no, of be course not.
Piling it up.
Yeah. Of course not. Of course not. Yeah. And now it makes even more sense from the standpoint that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, nuclear weapons are all but obsolete. You don't need them anymore.
Right.
You know, you've got rods of God that can do the same dang thing, and you don't have the fallout problem.
Right.
You know, if you want to blow up a Russian city, drop a tungsten rod on it, you know.
Yeah.
From outer space. That'll do the trick. And you don't have the nasty fallout. So you don't need them.
Absolutely. You know, it's fascinating.
They might be kind of handy to deal with asteroids, though. they might be sort of interesting to kind of play around with to see what you can come up with for some propulsion ideas. You know, there's all sorts of nifty ways you can use these dang things that doesn't require blowing up a Russian city.
Von Braun's prediction there. If, you know, hey, they're going to say killer asteroids at a certain point just before they say the fake UFO invasion.
Yep.
Interesting. Absolutely fascinating. Joseph, you take the cake as usual on that. I have to ask you, twice in the last week, the Artemis rockets have not been able to get off the ground. And the really lamer and lamer explanations.
I think NASA stands for not a space agency.
But Bill Nelson is up there saying, don't worry, we're going to go to Mars.
On a chemical rocket. Uh-huh. So, look, as far as I'm concerned, Daniel, something is going on. What it may be, I don't know. Mm. I mean, the rocket itself is gigantic. I mean, it's Saturn V size. And if I'm not mistaken, it has a bigger boosting power. So in other
words,
much bigger boosting power, so they can launch a bigger payload with the dang thing. What I'm afraid of is either they're following some sort of, you know, Hoagland-esque type of ritual timing with, you know, we have to postpone it until the timing is just right.
All right.
Or my other fear is that, and I'll be blunt, that people have become so incompetent in this country, we don't know how to launch a bottle rocket, much less a moon rocket.
Right.
And I'm very serious about that. You know, if you look at the galloping insanity of our leadership class, what makes anybody think that we're capable of launching a moon rocket?
Good point.
We've been relying on the Russians for years. So what happened? All of a sudden, we don't have any more Nazi scientists to build rockets for us. So now we don't know how. We forgot to do like the Russians did and have the Nazi scientists train us so that we can build our own rockets.
Well, that breakaway group now is just kind of gone off into the distance.
They're see you later, folks.
Joseph, I have to ask you this. Just. Huh. You know, fundamental opinion, and of course this ties in with the Artemis thing. Why haven't we gone back to the moon in 50 years?
Daniel, I don't know. The only thing that I can think of that makes any sense to me is that somehow we were warned off. Mm-hmm. Or the other thing that does make a bit of sense is the Hoagland scenario. In other words, that there were so many ruins up there that it became a hazard to do so, with that we just got lucky, you know, and didn't hit the dang stuff all the time. If you stop and think about it, his scenario does rationalize that aspect of things rather nicely. And, you know, where does China decide to land its probe? Well, on the far side of the moon, of course.
Right.
Yeah, you know, because that's so much easier to do.
Yeah, right.
You know.
The ruins.
The ruins, you know. It could be something like that. I don't know.
Well, they spent all those years airbrushing all of that stuff out of the photos that they took. They probably were just like, we can't do this publicly anyway.
Right.
That is absolutely.
Well, you know, the nice thing is that the Russians didn't bother airbrushing the stuff out of their moon photos. Here, see what we found? You
know? Isn't that why we have the C-3PO head there on the moon?
You know, stuff like that. look at the picture our Phobos Mars probe took of this weird-looking thing. Gee, absolutely. I wonder what it is, comrades.
Somehow these things are all tied together.
There.
Just amazing today. And for the record, Marty, I have to ask you this question. I forgive you. Forgive me if I already asked you this question. I'm sure that I have. But I'm going to go back to your meeting here just at the end with Casolaro one last time. Did you get any impression from Casolaro when you met him that he thought there may have been a hidden backdoor in the Promise software before it was stolen and the DOG was involved?
Now, the way it's been explained throughout this, it kind of comes around to that.
It makes sense of why he's so nervous. Yeah.
It makes sense. Absolutely. Well,
it makes sense to me. You have to think
about what was going on throughout that time period too.
Well, the reason it makes sense to me, is not only what's going on at the time period, but he's the one that puts together the whole idea that there's a back door in the first place.
Right.
And he's not going to be, he's not a stupid man. He's going to be able to think, okay, just exactly when was this back door really put in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea must have occurred to him. It had to have occurred to him.
You would think. You would think. That would have to be a question.
Yeah.
Somebody that's taken down, you know, so many other rabbit holes.
Bingo.
Bingo.
And if he's carting around an accordion folder of, you know, notes on all of this stuff and the software stuff and He's got to be thinking along these lines. And I'll tell you, I'll go even further, Marty. My guess here is that he's not only thinking this, but he's trying to assemble enough evidence so that he can go back to Bill Hamilton and say, this is what I think is actually going on.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be why Hamilton contacted me. Maybe Casolaro intimated to him at some point. You know, it makes sense.
That's fascinating. You know what's interesting about that, and this is how we can round out the conversation. I have the date of his death is August 10th, 1991.
Mm-hmm.
I have you, Marty, meeting him in August, September period, 89, and again, that same period in 90. Mm-hmm. So would you say by the last time you saw him, it's about a year later that he dies?
Yeah.
And so, in fact, there might have been a chance for a third meeting there had he lived, because that
could have been.
Because that whole thing with the chalet and the skiing event would have happened again in that August.
Uh-huh. Every year.
Period.
Without fail.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
And it's a 3 or 4 day event.
Okay. So he's dying just before that happens, really, because that's August 10th. And obviously this happens a little bit later.
Right.
So that would have been maybe, you know, a follow up. If there was going to be a follow up, that would have happened. When you look back just on the fate of the idea of you had these chance encounters, how do you feel about that? Just looking back at Casolaro.
Nervous. Nervous. Yeah. Nervous that I, you know, I don't even think I mentioned this to my cousin when we spoke back in the early 2000s. I didn't talk to too many people about it.
No, Marty, the other night when you and I were talking, that was the first I'd ever heard of it from you. And that's why I thought, oh, we've got to get this on the record.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, number one, it's safer in a way to do so rather than carry it around, you know, as a quiet loose end.
Yeah.
And I hate to be so blunt about it, but it is much better for us to do this and get it on the record.
No question. Than
to have you, you know, carrying around information that would be something that someone else might, you know, decide to keep you silent
yeah.
in a permanent way.
Well, Mark, you know, that makes me want to ask you this, which is why didn't you mention it all these years?
Well, because I kind of know somebody that's really close to the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, top of the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And went to, you know, as kids, we grew up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he married into one of the families. So,
got it.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you were just like, you know, it's a weird connection. And I had these conversations, but I'm not going to go out and talk about it. But now we're lucky enough that you brought this forward. And how do you feel having talked about it now?
Nervous.
I think it's important you put it on the record. I really do.
Yeah, I wouldn't feel. I would be the exact opposite. I would have been nervous carrying it around and not talking about it.
Yeah, well, I was, because I didn't speak to too many people, and needless to say, kind of lost track of the people that I was that I grew up with. You know, and swam and wrestled against.
Right. Right, absolutely. Yeah. Any last impressions just thinking about Casolaro and those meetings?
Well, you know, I find it rather strange that I just had the opportunity to meet somebody like that. It blew me away the moment I found out that he had been murdered. I mean, it floored me. I must have walked around my house for days just trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And that
would have totally freaked me out.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, I bet.
But incredible. Now, you know, I look back on it and think, wow, I was that close, and, you know, I got to meet one incredible investigator who compiled an enormous amount of evidence. You know, this is all after the fact that I discovered how much evidence he put out there. It's huge. And it's discombobulated, yes, mm-hmm. you know, as some people say. But it's a lot of evidence.
Well, just what they've been able to piece together of what he uncovered. And every researcher I've ever read, Marty, acknowledges the fact that what they've been able to piece together of what he uncovered is significant, but all of them acknowledge that it must be nowhere near what he managed to uncover and carried around in that big accordion file.
One can only imagine, cuz.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And Casolaro himself, you know, he knew he was on the verge of something. He also knew he was in danger, and the situation caught up with him. But in retrospect, he opened up a gigantic window on all this. So I guess we owe him a huge debt in that sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Incredible. Marty, thank you. I know everyone's going to be very happy that you put this on the record. And I think it is brave of you to come out with it now. So thank you very much. And it's going to fill in some blanks for people about Casolaro. and his life there. And just, you know, a chance encounter can reveal a great deal, but there's a few things I think in what he told you that provide lines of inquiry.
He didn't kill himself. And, you know, there was a Buffalo lawman who Danny knew, somebody from Buffalo, who also was told by Danny prior to him, you know, that he would never do that. Yeah. He would never.
Yeah. Cuz, thanks a lot. I appreciate you doing this for us. I really do.
All right.
Guys, nicely done.
Enjoy. Thanks.
Thank you, Marty. Joseph, off the charts. And
I know people are going to be interested
in that. No question.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thank you.
It's great to see you. Thanks so much for putting everything on the record today.
All right.
Not a problem.
Thanks, cuz. Thanks.
Thank you, Joseph. We'll see you soon.
Yep. Bye-bye.
All right. We talk soon. There you have it, everyone. Unbelievable testimony by someone who is related, is the cousin of Dr. Joseph Ferrell, and just off the charts testimony there relating to the Danny Casolaro Promise Software story, which we're still dealing with the ramifications and the question mark that comes out of the entire sequence of testimony there is there another player who got into that Promise software and adopted a backdoor into it before the Department of Justice stole it and set off this worldwide blackmail and info hoarding? And that, of course, sparked this entire worldwide blackmail / info running operation, which we're still in the throes of now and may relate to deeper issues around advanced technology and, of course, the secret system of finance, the black budgets. It all gets played into this and through the figure of Danny Casolaro. And then we have a first person account of what was going on in his mind shortly before he unfortunately died as in the line of duty trying to get the story out. So just an amazing story. And we will be back with you on Friday with the X series. Of course, join us at 8 p.m. live. And we're going to be doing coming up an X episode on Michael Reconosciuto. So be sure to stay tuned for that. Thanks so much for joining me here today. And we'll be back with you soon.